Coffee with Cudmore.
Light 104.7 and 1570 AM. WVTL.
Dennis Webster and I were just talking books. Dennis Webster is another author. In fact, he and I have done joint book signings, and he has a new book. I still have my current book. I'm not going to call it an old book yet, but my current book. But when we were out doing the book signings, we were doing it for Dennis's book, Haunted Mohawk Valley. But now, new from History Press is Wicked Mohawk Valley. Wicked good, Dennis. Wicked good.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah. In fact, let's get right. You got some great stories in here. One story, and tell us the premise. What is the premise of Wicked Mohawk Valley?
Well, I was looking for, short criminal stories, nothing contemporary, as you notice, nothing past 1972, and I wanted to try to represent the entire Mohawk Valley. So I started in Rome, New York, through Utica, Herkimer, and I went all the way down through to Schenectady. So I spent a lot of time going through historical archives, looking for articles and stuff that maybe I might not never heard of, even though I'm a lifelong resident of the Mohawk Valley.
Amen. Well, the one story that comes out of Fulton County is really gruesome. It's called The Creeping Death. What is that story?
Yeah, that fascinated me. What had happened was it was a father and two sons that made illegal alcohol in Utica, New York. And then the interesting thing, it was 2 years after Prohibition had ended, but all these still operators still wanted to make money. And they had bottled this and sold it to a woman by the name of Mary Derrico down in that direction. And she sold it to people, and in Gloversville alone, 15 people died within a day of drinking this. And then from that, from Gloversville up through Utica, another 18 people. So you're talking 33 people died from drinking this, and the law enforcement officers called it the creeping death because once you drink it, you were done. And it took like 2 or 3 days of pain and gruesomeness to succumb to it. And it was just an awful thing.
Huh. And the only way you could be saved is if right after you drank it, they pumped your stomach, but you didn't feel sick then. It took a while.
Right. A handful of people actually were blinded by it and lived through it, but most people that drank it died. And they were able to speak to one lady from her hospital bed in Gloversville. Her name was Lena Snyder. And she revealed that she had purchased this from Mrs. Mary, from Derrico. And that's when the law enforcement contingency swooped in. I mean, this went all the way down to Washington, D.C. They took this so seriously.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're talking 33 people died?
Right. What happened? No one really did a lot of time for it, which is amazing. Mrs. Derrico ended up getting probation because she didn't knowingly make it. She just sold it illegally. But the father and the two sons from Utica, the two sons got put for a short stint in a reformatory because they were younger, but he ended up getting 10 years in prison he pled guilty to second-degree manslaughter.
Mm-hmm.
But can you imagine, you killed 33 people.
Yeah. Well, I suppose there was no intent, but on the other hand,
right.
33 people. Dennis Webster and his book is called Wicked Mohawk Valley. Now, to get out of our immediate area, but I saw one story, and I didn't really read what her... I knew her crime was she killed her husband, but I was fascinated. I was reading in your book last night about the death of Roxalana Drews in Herkimer County. You've got a lot of pictures in that particular story and so forth. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the impression that, I mean, she murdered her husband, and that today they might have made a defense of the fact that he was an abusive man, that maybe it was self-defense that she murdered her husband, but what happened to her?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, when you read in the old articles from neighbors and friends and even her daughter, her husband William was a very abusive man towards Roxalana. They lived on an isolated farmhouse, and he would beat her with a horse buggy whip, and he was just a very... Neighbors called him odd and aloof, and you know, and she just had gotten to the point. She ended up, murdering him, and she tried covering it up by chopping him into pieces and cooking his body parts and burying him in the yard. And she ended up being found guilty and was hung for that in the Herkimer County courtyard. I do believe she was the last woman hung in the state of New York because they had adopted the electric chair in Auburn, like within a year or two of her being hung. And a lot of advocates tried to save her. They wrote to the governor and everything else, saying, you know, it was you know, an awful thing to, you know, be hanging this woman. And then just to read the last evening and day of her, you know, of her existence, where she's, you know, she's praying in her cell and writing letters to her daughter, and you know, all of this. It's very dramatic, leading right up to them, you know, putting the noose around her neck.
In the court, and this is in 1887, right? In the court, up in Herkimer, in the county courthouse yard, right? And they tried to keep the people back, or the law was you couldn't be so many feet within a hanging.
Yeah, the interesting thing was that they had outlawed or made illegal public hangings in New York State, so they had a fence around the jail, around the courtyard, but residents nearby were getting up in buildings and in trees and everything else, and people were trying to get in and to see it, even like politicians and other judges and stuff, and they were holding them back at the gate, because I guess, you know, as bad as it sounds, it's a spectacle, and people wanted to watch this.
Huh. All the way at the other end of the valley, you've got a story, I think, out of Schenectady called His Numbers Didn't Add Up.
Yeah, I found that an interesting story, because here was a man, his name was Edward Reali, R-E-A-L-I, and it was interesting because he was a numbers runner for what we could deem was organized crime.
Shocking.
When they did their investigation, they just deemed he was employee number 309. That's all his wife knew.
Uh-huh.
So nobody knew exactly who he reported to. But it was two young men that figured he had money, and they wanted to rob him and kill him and take his money. Frank Rossi Jr. and Damon Stender did this. They drove out into the suburbs or out into the woods, and they murdered him, and they dumped his body in the river, and they took his money. But they ended up getting caught. And the thing I found fascinating about the trial of these two was there were two young, good-looking teenage boys, and you had these women that were going to the courthouse, these teenage girls that were enamored with them. They were trying to bring them birthday presents, and they were like their fan club, and the media down there referred to them as the Bobby Sox girls.
Did they get convicted?
Yes, they did. They both got 35 years to life in prison. Justice Andrew Ryan was the judge for that particular case.
And their fans were the Bobby Sox girls.
Yeah.
And then you have a story out of Schoharie, I think, called The Chicken Roost Gang.
I know. I only found two small little articles, but I laughed because in the paper they referred to them as the Chicken Roost Gang, and I couldn't stop cracking up. You know, it's a lighthearted kind of thing, but it was the Banks family. It was the father and the mother and their two sons, and they were going across two counties. Farmers would get up in the morning, and all their chickens would be gone. And eventually, they got caught. And so I just imagine them back, you know, they did this in 1936. They're driving all over the place, you know, sneaking into chicken coops in the middle of the night. And, you know, I don't know, you know how farmers can be. I mean, you start going on a farmer's property, and you know, they'll come out with their shotgun, you know. But I just got a big kick out of that one, you know, the Chicken Roost Gang.
Dennis Webster, Wicked Mohawk Valley. If you want to read about his book, Dan Weaver of the Bookhound store in Amsterdam has an article on his website being MohawkValleyIndependent.com. That's his online newspaper. And I'm quite sure that Dan has copies of your book, or he's advertising your book on his website. That bookstore is at 16 East Main Street. But you were telling me, Dennis, that you're also available at a couple of other bookstores that you and I have... one of them you and I visited recently.
Right, the Open Door Bookstore and Mysteries on Main Street.
Open Door is down in Schenectady, Mysteries on Main up in Johnstown. So you're starting your publicity campaign for this. And again, if I were you, I'd get a hold of Dan. I bet you Dan would have a book signing. Do you have any book signings scheduled?
I've got one on March 24th, but it's at the Barnes & Noble in New Hartford. I would like to get back down towards your direction, Bob. I thoroughly enjoyed the book signings you and I had together. We had a lot of fun. You have a lot of fans out there for your radio show, and I could tell you're very beloved person in your area. They're very fortunate to have you, and you have a wonderful book of your own.
Yes,
I did. I thoroughly enjoyed reading, and hopefully you and I can do another book signing together. As we, I think we have more fun chatting about our stories and about writing than we than anything else.
I think it's a technique. I think having two authors, because I've also done, when you have, you know, I have another author that I sometimes work with now, Jim Labatt, who writes novels about Amsterdam and the Capital District. But yeah, I think having the two authors is, I think it's a marketing technique, Dennis. I think we were onto something there.
Yeah, and you know, traveling the entire Mohawk Valley back and forth, it's such a gorgeous, beautiful area, you know? I mean, when I drove into, you know, a couple of, like, Amsterdam and Schenectady when we did our book signing, it's just so gorgeous, you know? And when I have to travel, you know, for my job, I go to other parts of the country, and it's not as beautiful as here. We're very fortunate. We have such beautiful scenery, you know.
Well, back to your book, I noticed that in your preface, you do say, even though the title of the book is Wicked Mohawk Valley, you say, now don't get me wrong, I love the valley.
Oh, I do. I've lived here my whole life. I've gone to college here. I'm raising my family here. You know, in my life, I've had job offers to relocate, and I've turned them down. I love it here. I think it's a great, great place. It's rich in history. You know, you got wonderful people here. You know, really, truly, we have very low crime here, and you have great schools. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to look at, you know, I mean, like I said in the book, 99.9% of the people here are wonderful, law-abiding, hardworking people, but people like to look at the underbelly, you know. It's like peeling up the rock and looking at the little things that crawl underneath, you know.
There you go. And you've done that with Wicked Mohawk Valley. Well, Dennis Webster, I thank you. And then, do you have another website? I mean, I say there's an account of the book, and, you know, picture of the cover and so forth at MohawkValleyIndependent.com. Do you have a website yourself?
Actually, I don't, Bob, unfortunately, but... you know, the places that we mentioned, you know, like the Bookhound, wonderful, wonderful places, you know, right in your backyard down there, that I'm very thankful that they carry the title for me in there.
All right. So it'll be available, and I'm sure we'll be able to work out a book signing in the local area for Dennis. Dennis Webster, Wicked Mohawk Valley, published by History Press. You can find it on their website, I'm sure, historypress.com. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right. Thanks again, Bob. Always a pleasure.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
Bye.